Welcome to GleeCast,
the twice monthly
home of
movies about Glee or dancing or singing or something. It's just stuff we want to watch. Just go with it.
And casting. Here are your hosts, Emily and Erica.
Hello.
Are we all happening? Is everything happening?
Yeah.
Pinwheel, it was wheeling. When the pinwheel wheels, usually bad things happen. I think we're good. We're good now. I'm here. You hear me?
I hear you. Yes.
All right. Welcome to the holiday edition of part two.
Part two, yes.
That's right. We are just so prepared for holidays this year, I tell you. If only I was actually prepared for the holidays in real life and had, like, done my holiday shopping and stuff. But, I mean, priorities.
I think I'm done with my shopping, actually.
Aren't you just peachy?
I actually started wrapping. That's how advanced I am.
Oh, you people. I love the people who are like, oh my God, now I need time to wrap. But just stick it in a bag.
No, I like fancy, pretty wrapping. I picked out my paper.
You picked out your paper. You know,
it's really cute.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have some leftover paper from last year. So a good half of the presents are going to have whatever the theme was last year, which I think was Santa. Which is appropriate because today we're going to be talking about a little bit of Santa, aren't we?
A little bit, yes, we are.
We have a couple of things to talk about before we get there, but just to tell everybody what we're covering today, we're actually doing a twofer, if you will. We are starting with 2013's Infinite Santa 8000, an animated film, which we are very excited to discuss. And then we will move on to what movie, Erica?
Joyful Noise.
Joyful Noise.
Which is not explicitly a holiday movie. That I didn't realize.
Because it came out in January and it was kind of billed as joyful. The word, what time of year do you ever hear somebody use the word joyful?
Exactly.
Really only in December. So it's appropriate in its own way.
Joyful totally threw me off base. And
Yes. Well, you know, but it makes sense. But before we get there, a few other things. Well, first off, people, if you need a little more of me and Erica in your lives, if you check out episode, 23 of The Feminine Critique, which is the other podcast I do, the movie podcast, Erica was a guest star.
I was. It was very fun. I was excited to do it.
Yes. We covered Thor and Supergirl.
Oh, yes. We did.
One of those movies we recommend. One of them we do not.
Guess which is which.
Indeed.
Said the girl with a cat named Mjolnir.
Exactly. And somebody who does not have a cat named Mjolnir, but agrees with that. other thing I thought, I can't remember if you watched it. I feel like we talked about it, but I don't think you watched it. I feel like we need to address the Sound of Music NBC live thing.
Yeah, I didn't watch it because, full disclosure, I've never seen the actual film.
I mean, it is not one of my favorites, but, you know, I think it is certainly worth watching.
Well, Lisa Duffy and her mother are horrified that I've never seen it.
Naturally.
And the next time I go visit, they are going to sit me down and tie me down and force me to watch it. So.
Clockwork Orange style. I love it.
Yes. So I didn't watch it just because, I mean, I obviously know what it's about and I know the music and everything, but I just didn't feel it necessary to watch it without having seen the original.
I think for me, I think it's really awesome that they did it. I think because I think it did quite well in the ratings. I know, I mean, it had a lot of tweets about it, some positive.
Oh my God. My entire news feed was like Sound of Music just because three
people gaped out of it.
Yeah. The three people talking about it were talking about it incessantly. Like,
it was definitely something that you could live blog quite easily.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love that they did it. I love the idea that, like, maybe every year now in, like, the holidays, they'll do, like, okay, and this year we're going to do Carousel starring Hugh Jackman and Anna Kendrick. Or, like, I think it would be cool to keep doing that. I like that they, a lot of the complaints were that Carrie Underwood has no business doing this. Here's the thing. Carrie Underwood got people to watch it.
Yeah.
There is a whole audience that would watch something she does that would not watch The Sound of Music. And I'm sure she brought in a lot of people, and they filled the rest of the cast up with Christian Borle and Audra McDonald and Laura Benanti and actual Broadway people. So you had a good balance. In terms of her view of it, she just needed more acting lessons. She has the Catherine McPhee dead eyes thing when she acts, which is there is nothing going on in her eyes. And she just does not really know how to connect to an audience. But the rest of it was fun. And if you like Sound of Music, I think it was more than worth watching. So That was my take on that. Now, earlier when we were trying to schedule today, I asked you, are you ready to record? And I was at the gym. You said, oh, perfect. This gives me time to henna my hair. What the fuck does that mean, Erica?
I want to know what henna is.
I want to know what henna in your hair means. I know what henna in your hands means.
Right. Well, henna is an all-natural dye, and some people use it to dye their hair rather than using all the harsh, gross chemicals, which I did for years and years and years, and we'll probably go back to it at some point. But you know that Lisa and I are big proponents of the company Lush, and we love everything they do, and everything's handmade and vegetarian and vegan and not tested on animals. Not everything's vegan, just some things are vegan, but everything's made with an eye to no animal cruelty and using all natural, fresh ingredients. Like, they're just a really great company, and they make a henna. So back in September, Lisa and I took it upon ourselves to have a henna hair party.
Ooh.
The thing about henna is it comes in a block, and it's like it's almost like a powder that's pressed into a block and made solid.
Okay.
And you chop it up, and it smells kind of funny. The first time you do it, you hate the smell. Now I kind of like it because this is the third time I'm doing it. And all it does is coat your hair shaft. It doesn't actually dye your hair. It coats your hair shaft in like a color. So it's not supposed to be too drastic. There's really only four Lush colors to pick from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just supposed to be a healthier, better way. And it's supposed to make your hair more healthy.
Okay.
Because it's like a coating, and it's supposed to make it thicker and fuller and just smooth down the cuticle because it's coating the hair shaft. Okay. Blah, blah, blah. So the first time we did it, first of all, when you mix it with boiling water, and you're supposed to make a consistency of brownie batter.
Nice.
Except it looks like poop. Like, literally looks like poop. And as you put it on your hair, it like starts to dry and clump. Ugh. And it's so disgusting. And the first time Lisa and I did it, we just were in hysterics the entire time because we were basically
just poop heads, literally
poop into each other's hair.
Nice. I think there are movies about that.
Yes. And the first time, neither of us had great results, and we were like, we don't like this. So we were like, oh, we probably won't do this again. But then I got a body wave to my hair, forgetting that I had bleached my hair previously. Okay. So like the last 2 inches of my hair are just completely destroyed and damaged.
Okay.
And Lisa's mom had leftover henna that she didn't want to use again. So she gave it to me. So I was like, well, I might, like, maybe it'll make my hair better. Cause I tried everything else. I tried honey and coconut oil and absolutely everything, and nothing helped my hair. So I did that, and it actually made my hair like 100 times better health-wise.
Well, because the only other thing I would recommend to improve your hair is pregnancy.
Apparently.
Because every woman who's pregnant has the most fabulous hair.
I'm not willing to.
You could try the prenatal vitamins, though.
Oh, I could do that. Oh. But anyway, so it's very time consuming and tough to do. And it was time to do it again because my hair had gotten kind of damaged again at the bottom. But I started putting coconut oil in it because coconut oil helps your hair too. And it makes it a little easier to wash out because it takes a really long time to wash out because there's like coffee grounds in it. It's really a gross, disgusting thing.
Okay.
I don't know if I really recommend it to anyone, but it's working.
Yeah, you're not selling me, I'll tell you that much.
It works for my hair, so I'm going to keep doing it for the time being until my hair grows out and it's like normal again. Mm-hmm. Except I put the coconut oil in, and then you wrap your head in plastic. So if anyone can hear crinkling, that's my head right now. Nice. And for whatever reason, this didn't happen last time, but it happened this time. The coconut oil, like, I guess I was like more active and doing more. Like, I was like emptying the dishwasher or just like getting, like, cleaning up the bathroom after I put it on. And the coconut oil started sliding out from underneath the plastic wrap because it was like melting down my face. And I was like, oh my God. So I was having like a major catastrophe before you were finally like, okay, I'm ready. I was like, it was like coconut oil streaming down my face. And finally and then there was like one hole that I couldn't get to stop leaking in the plastic wrap. So I had to stuff cotton in it. It's just, it's a very big ordeal. So
are you okay now?
I'm good now. That's what the crinkling was. I actually had to bring a hand mirror into my bedroom with me to record just because I can't see my face. So I can't see if it's leaking or not. So I brought in the hand mirror so I could check periodically and make sure that I'm not leaking, because that would be bad if I started leaking all over the place.
Yeah, I do not have the mechanics or dexterity to handle any of this.
No, your bathroom would look like a monkey through poop.
Yeah, yes. And a lot of coconuts, too.
And coconuts.
Coconuts and poop. Just the diet of every champion.
But anyway, that's what henna is. And now our listeners are
very well versed.
Smarter about it too.
Here we go. All right. So, should we move on to our feature presentations?
We shall.
Okay. So we'll start with 2000. Technically, I guess the release date is 2013. Is it not?
Yes, it is. Because it was like just this past week, I think.
Yes. Okay. So Infinite Santa 8000 began, I guess, as a sort of, it was a bunch of short.
It was like a web cartoon. They were webisodes,
yes,
right?
Yes, that is the term that all the kids are using nowadays. So it was originally like kind of 2 minute webisodes, if you will.
Yep. About that. Santa Claus in the post-apocalyptic world.
Yes. So we're 1,000 years into. So I guess the year is about 3,000 and something. It's a typical apocalypse where very kind of steampunky, not much human life around, not much life of any sort around. We got a lot of robots. And then in the midst of all this is Santa Claus, who is not quite human, but more human than most of the robotic thingies around him. He has managed to survive because he is Santa Claus. So he still has Santa's ranch with reindeer and all the other things that you imagine at Santa's ranch. And with him is kind of the maybe last living child of the world, perhaps, named Martha.
Yes.
Now, Martha, I don't know at what point it's a spoiler to reveal something about Martha. So for now, we'll just say that Martha is a young girl. And she's a little damaged, as anybody living in a post-apocalypse normally is. So she doesn't quite speak, but she can laugh and she can kind of help Santa a little bit and such. But after, there are enemies in the midst, as there always are. So we've got kind of a very evil, very coolly designed Easter Bunny. who I always wondered growing up, like, what the relationship between Santa and the Easter Bunny was. I don't know about you.
Are they friends? Are they foes? We don't know.
I think now I kind of assume that they're frenemies.
Okay. Will. Like Mean Girls, they're like.
Yeah, like they have to, like they probably get together at like holiday parties because really they have so few colleagues. So it's like, oh yeah, this is where, you know, like the only other person who works like me is. But I feel like there's got to be, like the Easter Bunny must have such a complex.
Yeah.
No, because who really cares about Easter Bunny when all is said and done?
Santa gets so much more attention.
Exactly. So there is an Easter Bunny who is after Santa, but actually after Martha.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also meet the kind of main villain of the piece, who is a robot woman, master genius woman thing named Shackleton. And she is in charge of a whole kind of army of little robot things that don't care much for Santa Claus or kind of what he represents. And we don't quite know why. We will find out eventually, but Shackleton really wants Martha. So it becomes kind of a kidnapping and Santa and you see that's really all he has left in the world. So he was, you know, going the game and going to help her and save her back.
Right.
Now what's interesting about this is trying to figure out who the audience is for it in terms of what age, I guess.
Yeah, because it's a little violent.
It's violent, but
it's a cartoon.
It's a cartoon. And the violence that happens never really happens to anything human and living.
Right.
Most of the violence is, you know, Santa Claus fighting robots. It's grisly because there are like limbs being thrown apart and everything. But at the same time, it's not like there are like innocent people being hurt or being like thrown in the middle of this. And so in terms of the violence is done in a certain way where like it might be scary for kids. But if the kids are like maybe a little older, maybe like from 10 years old up and they kind of, you know, can watch something and just not get nightmares just because it's scary. I feel like it has a good message in the end. And again, like it's not sending any bad messages in that like innocent people are not getting hurt.
Right.
Which is something that I find like as I get older, I don't know. It starts to really bug me like in action movies when something happens and you realize like 50 people were just killed somewhere. Yeah. And it's actually one of the beefs I have with a lot of superhero movies.
Yeah. Well,
it's like, yeah, there's a giant battle and you're like, wait, but how many civilians just died? Like Man of Steel, huge problems with that. But anyway.
I haven't seen that yet. No. But I feel like Avengers did that well. Like they did a good job of being like, these people need to go over here. And
yeah. And with Avengers, like you got a feeling that, because I think they talk about like they talk about evacuating. You see people being affected by it. And then something that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has done cool, which is they've kind of acknowledged that seeing all of this has actually really affected the people of Earth, because now they have seen these things. Like, so I felt like that was the one movie that really did it right.
Right.
Whereas, actually, it bothered me most, I think, in Hulk, which I actually liked the new Hulk, not the...
The Ed Norton one.
Edward Norton one. I liked it so much more than I thought, but there was, like, a huge battle scene where, like, soldiers are just maybe dying, but it's never shown. But, like, as you're watching it, you're like, wait, everybody here must be dead. But they never talk about it again, and that bothered me. But we're getting off topic. But that,
yes,
that is,
we are.
my point, however, though, is that it's something I really respect about Infinite Santa, is that it doesn't do things like that where there are human lives at stake. Like, it's very much in this world of safety, I guess, in a way, that I can appreciate. The animation style, because it's, I feel like that's such a big part of it.
Yeah, it's really cool because it's not like straight up animation.
Yeah, it's not a cartoon, like a Disney cartoon where everything is, you know, picture like Lion King or Little Mermaid. Like, it's not that.
It's not that. It's almost like it's like if regular animation and like a motion comic had a baby.
Yeah, yeah, it feels very much graphic novel with moving pieces, I guess.
Right, it's not like totally stagnant like a motion comic would be.
Right, right. So
but
you
it
have maybe
has
like
moving joints and stuff.
Yeah, like the background might be still, but then the, you know, the characters within it have movement.
Right.
And so it's visually, it's really interesting, and it's something I think anybody with kind of like an artistic eye or anybody who's interested in different styles of animation, I think can really appreciate that. And just the styling and the like visuals are awesome because you have the design of Santa is pretty cool. And especially once he gets more badass.
Did we say that he's like a cyborg? I don't think we said that.
I don't think we did. He is very cyborg-esque.
He's
got,
you know,
like Terminator eye thing going, which I love me a Terminator eye. I don't know about you.
Everybody does. Especially during the holidays.
Except for Nazis. They don't like Terminator eyes, but that's and there's certain like, the way the shots are composed is really cool because you get towards the end when you have like a big battle going on, it does this cool thing where like suddenly the camera is doing this almost like overhead shot where it feels like a video game where you see like, you know, it's like you're looking directly over it. So you see your figure of Santa, it's like a Pac-Man board. And then you see all the things that are chasing him from this direction. And then the other things are chasing him coming in that direction. So it like, it gives you this map all of a sudden of like what he's actually dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Which just keeps it like really kinetic and so it doesn't get boring. Like it's a long battle. There's a lot of things going on, but it just, because it's giving you a lot of different visuals, you're just constantly watching different things and it's really cool.
It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My Shining brilliant endorsement. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. The sound is also really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's very gushy. Like when things are stabbed, there's a gushy sound, which I like gushiness. I appreciate that. The voice work, it's you have a Santa who's fun. I don't know who actually does all the voices.
We could look it up, but we're far too lazy for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, actually, it's right here. Dwayne Bruce does the part of Infinite Santa, and he's like your typical like good ho ho Santa, and it, you know, so it's a nice balance of like warm, fuzzy Santa with being pretty badass. And Tara Henry does both Shackleton and Martha. And Dr. Shackleton has a really great, like, craggy old lady voice. And it's cool that it's a female villain. It's just a really neat touch. And she's a pretty cool villain because she's pretty evil and smart. So that works. My only issue, Martha gets... There's a lot of moments where I just want Martha to do something instead of having it for her. So I'm never a fan of the damsel in distress, and you know, I kind of wish Martha would hold her keep, if you will, I guess. But yeah, I guess And then Michael Neal, who is the director and co-writer, along with Greg Anson, does the voice of the Easter Bunny and a few others. So.
We love Michael Neal.
Yes, we do. If there is ever a movie made about Jim Henson, I insist that Michael Neal plays Jim Henson.
He does look like him.
He does, yes. Oh my God, that reminds me. I was in Barnes & Noble yesterday, and they have made this series of children's, I guess it's like for kids like who are like 9 years old or so. It's like these mini biographies of historical figures, and they have one of Jim Henson.
Oh.
And I started reading it in the store, and then I had to stop because I started tearing up. I just couldn't do it anymore. But again, side note. So now this Infinite Santa, overall recommend, Erica?
Absolutely. It's super fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's just something that's really different. And Christmas, I used to try every Christmas to, on my blog, do a lot of, review a lot of the Christmas horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
I got to a point where I watched most all of them that are existing and then realized all the ones that are currently being made. It's kind of the way zombie films are made now. You can make a zombie film for very little money in your backyard with your friends, and you can sell it to get released because they know, production companies know that somebody out there like me is going to rent it if it's a zombie movie. The same thing has happened with holiday horror movies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You see more and more, every year, suddenly there are these, ultra low budget movies that have a cover that's very deceiving because the cover, you're like, oh, look, it's called Xmas X-ray Killing or something. But the cover looks decent. You read the back of it, you're like, okay, it's a horror movie about a killer Hanukkah menorah thing. And you're all excited to watch it, and then you realize it's shot on video with a handheld camera, and it's painful to watch. So I've gotten to a point where I'm more hesitant to watch holiday horror films because by percentage, zombie films, they tend to be the worst horror films out there.
Yeah.
And I really think it is because studios are smart enough to know that they can still sell them even if they're not good, just because it's a catchy theme.
Right.
But
that is not the case.
Exactly.
With Infinite Santa 8000.
Yes. So in the realm of in the realm of holiday horror movies, especially new ones, this is something that's really fresh and really different and just really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it is totally available now, I think, on Amazon, right?
I think everywhere. I think I think you can
Is it on Netflix?
I think it's on. No, I don't think it's on Netflix. I think it's on iTunes and Amazon. You can instant download it.
Yeah, I know. I think it was on VOD. I don't know if it still is.
That, man.
Right? Fancy pantsy.
We know people on VOD.
I know.
It's kind of crazy.
What we'll do is we'll post links to it on the Facebook page.
Yes.
Because we're not sure where it is. But it's definitely Amazon. I know that much.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm pretty sure iTunes.
Okay, cool. So yeah, that is Infinite Santa 8000. Something special and different that we recommend.
That everyone should go enjoy.
All right, so now should we move on to our other main feature of the day?
Yes, our non-holiday main feature.
Our non-holiday, yet holiday main feature. 2012's Joyful Noise.
Oh, Joyful Noise.
Starring Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton.
And Jeremy Jordan.
All right. So now Joyful Noise, you want me to give a quick synopsis or do you want to do it?
Oh God. There's so much going on in this movie.
There's a lot of subplots. Okay. Basic story is that, Dolly Parton, I'm not going to do character names. Dolly Parton, her husband, Kris Kristofferson, runs a church choir. And the church choir competes very much like a glee club in these big national competitions. In the very first scene, I'm all excited because I didn't realize Kris Kristofferson was in the movie.
Oh.
And credits start going and I see "and Kris Kristofferson." I'm like, fuck yeah, that's awesome. As soon as his name is "and Kris Kristofferson," he's fucking dead.
Yeah, he up and dies.
He up and dies before we reach the 2 minute mark in the movie. So he has a heart attack while conducting them at a competition. So Dolly Parton, who is kind of a wealthy, she's a wealthy widow. She assumes that she is going to be named choir director, but instead Courtney B. Vance, who is the head of the church, gives the position to Queen Latifah. Now Queen Latifah is a single, not quite a single mom.
No, she's just kind of
she's an army wife.
Yes.
And a nurse and a waitress.
Yes.
And mother to a 16-year-old singing sensation, and a, I don't know how old the other son's supposed to be, but let's say her twin brother.
Yeah, I think he's like 15, 16.
And he has Asperger's.
Yes.
Which I'm still confused if it's a thing, because now they're changing the rules on me. So Queen Latifah takes over. There's some friction because Dolly Parton felt like she should have been choir director.
She's a little entitled.
Yeah, and Queen Latifah does not like that Dolly Parton cinches, she modifies
the rope
so that it makes her boobs look great.
They do not have a good relationship.
They do not, yeah. They're not so close. But we also get in the mix is Dolly Parton's grandson, Jeremy Jordan, from Smash, everybody,
yes,
is kicked out of his house or something. So he comes to live with her. And it turns out he's also a good singer, so he joins the choir, starts to kind of flirt with Queen Latifah's 16-year-old daughter. And they go to the first big competition, or I think it's like regionals, and it's totally the same thing as Glee. It's like regionals, nationals, everything.
It's
so
essentially Glee season 2.
Yes, very much so. They go to the first competition. They don't win, but it turns out because vocal adrenaline beats them,
yeah,
basically.
I have the exact same note. It's vocal adrenaline. Yeah. I have, vocal adrenaline.
And it reminds me how I have no ability to spell the word adrenaline. I don't know.
I don't either.
Mookie, there is a plastic bag on the table. And Mookie just jumped up on the table to go into the plastic bag.
Well, he's...
I have no power to get it. He's going to fall off the table in the bag, and it's going to be hilarious. Okay. A girl can dream. A cat mom can dream. So vocal adrenaline beats them, but of course we find out that vocal adrenaline was actually cheating and had ringers and stuff.
Right.
So instead, they're going to go to nationals. There's this kind of conflict because Queen Latifah's daughter and Jeremy Jordan think that they should maybe do more modern songs, but Queen Latifah thinks they should stick to the old status quo. So eventually they get to the big competition. Meanwhile, let's talk about the best subplot ever in any movie. Okay, something I really appreciate about this movie is that it's very interracial. You have a variety, you have black people, white people, Asian people, like, and it's just they're all in one church, and it's never really even a thing. Like, it never becomes a source of conflict. It's just there, and it's natural, and it's kind of great. Brandon's picking up the whole bag to put Big Mookie down. Oh. Thank you. Yes, I know. I'm aware. He's in there. Okay, sorry. It's distracting, but it's really cute. So now in the choir is one woman who's, I guess, supposed to be like in her late 30s or so. She's black. And there's like a couple of like little dropping hints of her being flirtatious with this older man in the choir, this Asian man who's probably in his like 50s, I guess.
Like late 50s, early 60s?
Do you think he's that old?
Maybe I'm picturing him differently in my head.
Okay, so anyway, they are at one of the practices or something, and she says something to the extent of, I haven't been with anyone in 3 years, and then he kind of says, me neither, and then they have sex, and then the next morning, she's bringing him pancakes, and guess what?
He's dead.
He's fucking dead.
Which was so bizarre.
It was such a weird subplot.
There was so much death in this movie.
So then, like, throughout the movie, like, then somehow this word gets out about this and everyone knows. So anytime she like goes to talk to a man and he realizes who she is, he's like, whoa, no, you're gonna kill me.
Yeah.
And backs away until the end, where, minor spoiler alert to this one subplot that has nothing to do with the rest of the movie, a younger, in better health Asian man meets her and's like, oh, I've heard about you. And the movie ends with them getting married.
Yeah. This movie was so all over the place.
So there's also, the teenage daughter, we didn't talk about Jesse L. Martin. Queen Latifah is not a widow. Her husband, Jesse L. Martin, is in the army. And he had been in the army when he was a younger man. And then throughout this movie, there's also another subplot is how the town is like really hit by the economy. So like throughout, you see stores closing and everybody's losing their job. And you find out that Jesse L. Martin went back to the army because he couldn't get a job. And that was the only way he felt he could help provide for his family. Now, this movie commits a cardinal sin that Smash also did, which is putting Jesse L. Martin in a movie and not letting him sing.
Yep.
Not cool. Joyful Noise. But so there's that subplot. There's like a gang member kinda who's like obsessed with Queen Latifah's daughter because she's all like virginal.
I don't think he's a gang member.
Well, he's just like a bad boy.
He's supposed to be like the captain of the football team. Like he's just like the cool kid at school.
See, I thought he was like the bad boy.
I don't think
or
so.
Maybe Jeremy Jordan was the bad boy.
Jeremy Jordan was the bad boy because he was from New York, and if That's you're right. from New York, you're the bad boy.
So there's like him trying to get with her, but then him and Jeremy Jordan fight, but then they become friends.
Yeah, and he helps them at the competition.
He helps at the competition, and Jeremy Jordan helps the Asperger's kid not be so Asperger kitty.
Yeah, right? Helps him come out of his shell.
Yeah, that's important.
Which I feel like isn't that the thing you like? That's the problem with Asperger's. Like you can't, you don't have social cues, so you have to like learn them, and it doesn't happen in the course of a month.
Well, and I guess that's the thing is that like nobody taught him, so Jeremy Jordan came in and he's like, "I got this," and he did.
Oh boy.
We get a lot of this being Dolly Parton in the movie. We get a lot of Dolly Partonisms.
Like, oh my God, I have so many written down.
I know. Give me some of yours.
Well, they're not even actually. There's just like a lot of
Country wisdom.
Yes, and they're not all from Dolly. I have
Yeah, there's some that were Queenie.
Yeah. I have, you are so country, you've been married 3 times and still have the same in-laws. That was more of an insult, but it was funny.
Yeah, that's a Jeff Foxworthy worthy one.
Yeah. There's always free cheese in the mousetrap, but the mice there ain't happy.
Yep, I wrote that one down. I had, when foxes pack the jury box, the chicken's always guilty.
you are fallen rock zone, and anyone standing too close to you, they're going to have a mess of rocks fall on them, too.
I wrote that one, too, because it's so awkward. It's like, what they were trying to say, but there was an easier way of saying it.
Right. Trying to fool me is like trying to sneak a sunrise past a rooster.
Yep, I got that one. I'd call you stubborn, but it'd be an insult to mules.
There were just so many of them, and they were so forced and so stilted when they were delivered that they just stuck out like a sore thumb. I was like, what? Who wrote this script? And, oh, it was just weird.
There is a cat fight there's a food cat fight in the diner, because Queen Latifah ends up working in a diner as a waitress, and Dolly comes in, and they start throwing rolls at each other.
There's basically, like, every movie cliche ever.
Pretty much. And the best is like, so because you have like the teenage daughter, because there's also all this complicated relationship between Queen Latifah and her daughter, that it's like very much like they just don't get along. And the daughter's like, it's because I'm pretty, isn't it?
It's a great moment. I forgot that happened.
Yes. And what really bothered me was she is 16 and they keep saying she's 16. How old is Jeremy Jordan? Because he's not going to school. So he's got to be at least 18.
18, yeah.
At least. And well, she's like supposed to be a very virginal 16-year-old.
He can have a late birthday and be 17.
Okay, I'll give you that.
He could have like a December birthday and have graduated. Can he? I think so. No? Maybe not.
Maybe. No. Oh, here was my favorite pickup line ever. When he's talking about how, like, because he hasn't seen her since she was a kid. He's like, you grew up on Fast Forward. Like, one of those movies with flowers. Which is easily, like, I'm not going to lie. That's, if any man said, I know I'm engaged, but if any man said that to me, things would get complicated real fast is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about the songs?
Oh, the songs. Sure.
Okay. So we had, the first song is like the choir-y song where Kris Kristofferson dies.
Yep.
Then we have Man in the Mirror done gospel style,
which was fine, enjoyable. And yeah. I was kind of like, oh, like this is what we're going to do. We're going to do like, classic pop songs, but in a kind of gospel way.
Yeah. And when they do that, it's really good.
Yeah.
Baby, I'm Amazed. I don't remember. Smart. Who was that? Was that Asperger's kid singing?
Was it him and Jeremy Jordan at the piano, maybe?
That might have been it.
After that, I basically stopped writing down the music because I wasn't interested in it.
Okay, I got a few more.
It went back to like all gospel songs until the end, right?
Yeah, well, there was Vocal Adrenaline, and I didn't even think they were that good.
There was a lot of showmanship. There was a lot of spirit fingers, a lot of jumping around, and I think like, confused people.
Yeah, they come out and start singing it. Everybody in the audience is like, wow. But I'm like, I don't know. It's kind of like when Catherine Beefy would sing on Smash and everybody would be like, whoa. And I'm just like, ah. But anyway. then we had Okay. Oh, this. Then we had Queen Latifah had a solo, and I think the song was called like "Fix Me," or something. That's what it sounded like it was called.
Oh, she was like alone in the church, right?
Yeah, I call this the "You Haven't Seen the Last of Me" moment.
Yeah,
because it was totally her alone at the piano, just like Sharon Burlesque. Yeah. Then we had the next song I actually really loved. It was I think the song was called "From Here to the Moon and Back." And I think I don't think this was an original song.
Was this the dream ballet, essentially?
Yes, this was the Ghost Chris Christopherson duet. Because it starts with Dolly singing with Jeremy Jordan. And then it transitions into her singing with the ghost of Chris Christopherson. But it's actually, I was pissed the whole time that you put Chris Christopherson in your movie and then you kill him. But this was, I thought this was such a pretty song that I'd never heard before. And it's a really like, the lyrics were really pretty, and it's Dolly and Chris Christopherson singing together, so it's pretty great. And I don't know, like that moment was like the high point of the movie for me, easily.
It was a sweet moment. They wound up like dancing in starlight.
Yes, in ghost starlight.
In fancy clothes, because she was dreaming about it, sitting on the porch. It was a fun moment.
So then we get kids. I can't remember what they sang, but remember the kids sing?
No.
You don't remember the little kids? So now we get to Nationals, I think.
At some point, I think I was like, oh, this movie's still on? Like,
it's long. It's an hour 50. And this is not even long. 50. I guess you could have cut the subplot about killing Asian men with your vagina, but it would be a very different movie without that. And I don't know if it's the movie I'd want.
They should have just kept that subplot. Like, that's it. That should have been the plot.
That should have been the movie. So we get, I can't remember what song they sang. It might have been a song that I didn't know, but it's like one of the choirs is all kids.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because it's during the big competition, right? Yeah, and they're like, how are we going to be kids?
It's really charming. And I don't know, it's always cute when like little kids can actually sing and dance and they sing and dance. I can't remember at all what they sang, but it was adorable.
Yeah.
And then finally we get the New Directions mashup.
Yes, which included, are you ready for this list?
Tell me, because I don't remember it.
It had some Nelly in it.
Okay.
It had some Chris Brown in it. It had some Sly and the Family Stone in it. And then it had Signed, Sealed, Delivered, which I forget who sings that song.
Uh-huh.
But it was basically Sister Act style. They changed all the words to have to do with God.
Yes, yes.
Because we also had, essentially, we had an air rights moment. Because Dolly was like...
Well, I forgot about this because it ultimately meant nothing.
Because there was another subplot, yet another subplot, where the head of the church Courtney B. Vance, said, you know, if you're going to sing, he also was in Queen Latifah's camp. Once she eventually gave in and was like, okay, we could sing more fun music. And he was like, no, you have to do the songs the way I, like the old songs. And
he became the Maggie Smith, if you will.
Right. And Dolly was like, well, all we have to do is have our own church. So she was like pouring money into becoming her own church.
Yep. I'd go to the church of Dolly in a minute.
So she wound up forming her own church so they could compete and do their own songs, but she didn't have to do it in the end anyway, right? He gave it.
Right. He's like, all right, fine.
But it was like, and it was
like, they also have to get to LA. So there's like a mad scramble to get to the airport where Dolly's driving and not driving fast enough. And it's just like more things that make the running time go longer, and there's no reason for them at all.
And wasn't even just the song thing. He was like, I don't want Jeremy Jordan performing. That was Latifah. Queen Latifah was like, okay, we could do the new songs, but I don't want Jeremy Jordan in the band.
She had watched the second season of Smash, and she knew what she was talking about.
Yeah, she was like, I don't want him to turn this into the shit list.
Because let's talk about the first time we meet Jeremy Jordan's character. Is he's watching the church choir perform.
Man in the Mirror.
Man in the Mirror. And when it finishes, he starts applauding loudly. And what is his line? He says, it's a really stupid line.
It's essentially like, that was the shit. It doesn't.
It's like.
Yeah.
Wow, damn it. I wrote it down. Maybe I. It's something where he's like, yeah, let's get some noise in this bitch. That's just. Oh, yeah. Woo. Make noise in this bitch was the line. Which is just so awkwardly said, and it's clear that, like, it's supposed to try to show, like, oh, he's a bad boy, but it just makes him sound stupid. Because even if you're a bad boy, you know not to say that in a church.
Yes.
This is written and directed by Todd Graff.
Who did Camp, which I remember liking.
Oh, I love Camp.
Yeah. And The Beautician and the Beast. But Camp.
Yeah, he directed Camp in a movie called Band Slam. This was his third directorial movie.
We should cover Camp.
Should do Camp.
I haven't seen it in like over a decade.
Oh, and that was before Anna Kendrick was famous. And
I didn't even know she was in that.
She sings The Ladies Who Lunch.
I remember nothing about it. I just remember liking it.
Her moment in that movie is like pure brilliance. Like I remember, because I think I watched it before she, like I knew who she was too. And I was just like, oh my God, this girl better go on to great things. And I'm very happy that she did.
I only watched it because, who's the guy in it? Isn't there like a... I don't know. I'm looking at it now. We'll keep talking. I'll figure it out.
I do not remember. But yeah, The Beautician and the Beast, I never actually saw.
I think I saw it on like TV.
Yeah, I remember when it came out. It's not a musical, but we should consider that anyway.
Camp, we should definitely do though.
Yeah, most definitely.
Add that to the short list.
Indeed. So yeah, Joyful Noise, I guess you can think of it as the religious version of Burlesque, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, because it has that similar thing where it's just, there's so many, unnecessary subplots, and it goes on too long. When there's music, the music is really good, but the movie doesn't quite understand what its, like, strengths are, so it doesn't make great use out of them.
It could have used a really good editor.
Yes, yes, it could have.
I think with a good editor, it could have been an entertaining movie.
Yeah. The one thing that I really do think is awesome is that they do keep it very racially mixed, and it's not a thing.
Right.
Like, I'm making it a thing now by pointing it out, but I love that the movie doesn't point it out at all, just that, like, because there's, like, one of the guys in the choir is this, like kind of skinny white guy who owns a hardware store that is also going to close because of the economy, and, like, his wife is black. And it's, again, like, nothing is ever said of it.
Right, even though it takes place in Georgia. Like, yeah. it's not a thing, which is nice.
Yeah, it's really refreshing.
There wasn't a subplot about race, which was a good thing.
I mean, there was a subplot about a woman who really likes Asian men, but that was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a weird watch, but I think most of our listeners would really enjoy it.
If you fast forward, like, a quarter of it.
Yeah, because like the romance, because obviously there's a romance between Jeremy Jordan and Queen Latifah's daughter, and it's like it doesn't bring anything to
it. Yeah, like that wasn't needed at all. Like the relationship between the Asperger's son Walter and Jeremy Jordan was more interesting than his relationship with her.
And so was the relationship between Queen Latifah and her daughter,
which was
actually much more complicated. And, like, was given more weight than this kind of, like, token romance between, like, the young leads kind of thing.
Right, because she also essentially thought that, like, her mother was the reason that her father wasn't there.
Right, right. And then you find out a lot of other things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's, like, it's a weird, like, the tone is so weird because it's really heavy in some spots.
But then comedic.
And then, like,
really
goofy vagina killing in other parts. So... it's just such a strange approach to this kind of movie. Like, this movie could have been made just very differently, but for whatever reason, this is what we get. And overall, I was happy with it. It made me... I giggled a lot watching this. I won't lie.
I think I asked what was happening a lot. I was like, what? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Because it was just bizarre. Like, I think it would go over a lot better in, like, a group setting where you could kind of talk through the boring parts.
Yeah, I could see that.
But make fun of, like, the ridiculous parts.
Yeah, and then sit back for, like, the good musical parts.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what we recommend. Watch Definitely. This in a group.
Make yourself some, like, alcoholic hot toddies, cue up the grits, and watch this with friends and alcohol.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with.
That's our review.
That is our review of Joyful Noise. It is not on Instant Watch, but it's out there on DVD, so I'm sure you can find it.
It is also on HBO Go, if you have the HBO Go.
Ah, very nice.
Is where I watched it.
Very nice. This is coming out December
15th.
All right, so therefore we wish everybody, we'll say Merry Christmas because we already had to wish everybody Happy Hanukkah because that's over.
Yeah, it already happened.
Merry Christmas and Happy Kwanzaa, I guess, right?
And Happy New Year.
And of course, Happy New Year. We're going to come back right before the New Year, right?
No, on New Year's Day.
Okay,
New Year's Day.
And Now, this was my pick coming up, right? I am excited to revisit. It is on Instant Watch right now, so it's perfect for everybody. And, folks, it's time to cut loose.
Everybody, cut loose.
Everybody, cut loose. We're going to do 1984, I think, Footloose, starring Kevin Bacon, John Lithgow, and Diane Wiest, Chris Penn, and a young pre-nose job, I think, or maybe not, pre-different looking Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yes.
She looks very different in that movie, and I don't quite know what it is.
That'll be
might
fun.
Just be the baby fat. I don't know.
I feel like we should give a short in memoriam because the Glee cast universe suffered a loss this past week. I'm very sad about Paul Walker's death.
Oh, right. Yes. I thought you were going to say Nelson Mandela. I'm like, no. Yes, that was
that was sad too.
I mean,
unfortunately, Glee cast was more affected by Paul Walker's death.
In a more direct way, we were.
I'm like legitimately sad about it because, I mean, if you listen to the show, you know how much I enjoy the Fast and the Furious films, and not that I wish he had finished filming and then died. I wish he hadn't died at all so we could have an endless supply of Fast and the Furious films. Yeah. But as in tribute to him, we're going to move forward with our plan to cover all the Fast and Furious films. So going forward, the episode that comes out on the 15th of every month will be the next Fast and the Furious film.
Mm-hmm. So Too Fast, Too Furious will be up next.
Yes, on January 15th. Get your NOS ready. We're gonna send Paul Walker out in style.
That's right, with a 6-month tribute.
Yes, it's gonna be the longest. Maybe we could write to Guinness World Record the longest running tribute to Paul Walker.
Well, because I guess we can't quite keep up. Are there any like direct to video spin-off sequels that they made that we can keep going in there?
I don't know. We could wait for Fast 7 to come out, but I don't know when that's gonna happen now.
And he was in every one of them, right?
He was, yeah.
Okay. Well, Vin Diesel is not in 2.
No, wait. He's not in... Is he in Tokyo Drift? I don't think he's in Tokyo Drift. Wait, I could look.
Do we skip that one then?
No, because I like Tokyo Drift.
All right, I don't know these things.
It's not well-liked, but I enjoy it.
I thought people did like Tokyo Drift.
Maybe, I thought, like, style-wise, they like it?
I think that's... Maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Because it's...
Because I know Part 4 is the one that, like, brought everybody back to
it. Right. And, because that's the Fast and Furious.
Right.
But Tokyo Drift is just it's a departure because I forget the guy's name who took over the franchise, but he took over at that point. So it's very different from the first two.
Right, right.
But you have to watch the first two because you have to know all the characters because they're recurring.
Sure. It's like the Saw movies, I understand.
Paul Walker is not in Tokyo Drift.
Okay.
But yes, so that's
all right. So Footloose and then Too Fast, Too Furious. That is what you can look forward to in January.
Yep. And until then,
happy holidays.
Have a great day.
Indeed.
Bye.